Copyright Forum of Christian Leaders. The contents contained on this website are solely for your own individual, non-commercial, and informational use. Any other use is strictly prohibited without our express prior written consent. See the full copyright disclosure at focalonline.org.
Welcome to our roundtable discussion on responding to the refugee crisis in Europe. And the way we're going to run this is that we're going to have about a half an hour of panel discussion up here with our experts who I'll introduce very shortly. And then we're going to break for 5 to 10 minutes in the middle, and you can write any questions down and submit those at that time. And then we'll come back for another half hour of discussion where we address those questions. So my name's Dr. Peter Saunders from the UK, working with Christian Medical Fellowship. And I've got on the panel here our experts. So on immediately on my right is Bert De Ruyter from Amsterdam, who works with Operation Mobilization and the European Evangelical Alliance. He's a consultant in Christian-Muslim relations and has actually done a PhD in Christian-Muslim relations in Europe. And then next to him is Paul Sidnor, who works with the International Association for Refugees, that's the IAFR, and he's based in the north of France, and they're working with refugees in Malawi, Kenya, France, Malta. And he's particularly interested in helping churches engage with the refugee crisis. And he has a PhD in faith and displacement. And then on my far right is Beth Grove. And Beth is the European Director of the Fander Centre for Apologetics in London. And if you were at the session last night, you would have heard Hutton Tash being interviewed. And she works with Beth. And Beth is... Also, she has 20 years of working with Muslims, both in terms of compassionate care and also evangelism as well. So we've got quite a treat here. Now, in terms of setting the scenes, refugees are not a Europe-only problem. There are 60 million displaced people in the world. 20 million of them are refugees, and 40 million are internally or forcibly displaced people. And there are about 1.3 million refugees in Europe, but of course it's a recent problem over the last few years, and we've seen two waves of refugee migration. The first has been from Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq, those sort of countries where people have come through Turkey, across the Aegean Sea into Greece and up. And then a second wave, much smaller, from Africa, countries like Nigeria, Somalia, Eritrea, where people are braving the Mediterranean, coming up through Italy. And so both of those streams have been operating. And countries have responded in different ways. Germany has received the most applications of 500,000, but Hungary and Sweden, on a population basis, have had a higher number of applications than that. And of course, the situation's changed in the last month or so with the deal that's been struck between the European Union and Turkey. So for exchange for billions of euros, there's an agreement to offer Turkish people visa-free travel in Schengen countries, a new scheme for resettling refugees, and along with clamping down on people smugglers. And so we've seen a drop in the numbers, which has changed the dimension, and we'll explore this later. But I wonder, my first question for the panel, really, starting with the basics, what does the Bible teach us about refugees, aliens, strangers, and how we should be reacting to them as God's people? Who'd like to start with that? Beth, maybe.
I think it's very biblical to respond, as we said yesterday briefly in the prayer time, with Christ's love and compassion on them. And there's verse after verse, especially even in the Old Testament, that talks about loving the alien in your land. And we know that, of course, even in the line of Jesus, if you look at his line through the Bible, there were aliens in his line that weren't necessarily originally a part of the chosen people. And so the whole concept of God God's message and God reaching out to all people. He didn't just die for one group of people, he died for everyone. Jesus himself was a refugee to Egypt. So I think it's ingrained in our faith and in our word, in our Bible, to look at the alien in the land and to see as a Christian to respond with compassion, not acceptance of all that they stand for, but with compassion and with love.
Bert?
I hold on as well to just the knowledge that God has continually called out a people for himself. And you can trace that right straight from the start of scriptures right straight through. And we all know that. But along with that is God has given the promise that I will always be with you. And so he has called out a people, but he's also gone with them. And so to me, that's a very big part of this issue in the scriptures, is that it's a way that God calls a people to himself, and that he fulfills his promises of his presence being with his people.
Several things. I think in the Old Testament, the people of Israel is and reminded that they were aliens themselves, and that's why they can understand the mindset of the alien. And that's, I think, something that as a Christian we are realizing we are aliens on earth. This is not our home. We are not Europeans in the first place. We are citizens of heaven. And secondly, I think Paul in Acts, I think it's 20, speaks about God creating mankind out of one person and also designing where they should live. Actually, it says very clearly he has assigned people where they should be living. So even within the scheme of how people movements are taking place, it's good to remind ourselves that he is in control. And actually, Paul continues that conversation, says, well, in order for these people to search for him, to seek for God. So it's kind of interesting that sometimes the people movements that God seems to be maybe installed because of economic reasons or whatever reasons, in the end are used by God for people to search for him.
Many Christians and Europeans see the refugee crisis as a threat, but should we be seeing it as a threat or an opportunity? And if it's an opportunity, in what way is it an opportunity? Who'd like to tackle that one? Go on, Paul.
I hesitate to answer first because I would like to say it's neither, and neither a threat nor an opportunity. But to me, I see it as this is God's plan. This is God's mission. This is the way that he is building his kingdom. And he's using the suffering that displaced people go through to show that he is much greater. He's sovereign over this. He is provident in the midst of this. And so for me, mission among refugees and reaching out to refugees, yes, it's an opportunity to share the gospel and to share the love of Christ. But more than this, it's the opportunity to be faithful in my own walk and in my own calling to serve the Lord and to follow his example, which has been to love the stranger.
Could it be also that it's both and? with Christ, it's not a threat. But without Christ, I think it could be very really a threat, in the sense that with Christ, we have a solution, especially as Christians. But if you don't have Christ and you see waves of people coming into the land, especially people who hold a very strong ideology that could fill a vacuum that has no real, in a continent that doesn't have a strong faith, then you could see the threat. But if you have a strong Christianity and you have a solution and you're proactive in taking that solution to the millions coming in, many of whom are Islamic, many of who are Muslims, then I think it's not a threat. So it all depends, I think, if it's a strong Christianity or not.
And just to pick up on that, to see it as a solution as well, to me, picks up on the hope that Christ offers, the hope that the community of faith of Christians that it offers in this situation, and therefore to focus on that, those hopes, and as opposed to the fear and the threats, is much more important.
And also looking at the possibility that quite a lot of the refugees coming into Europe are from Christian backgrounds and may bring in some spiritual life to some of our communities as well. So in that sense, sometimes there is something bringing in new life, whether it's people converting into Europe, which is happening quite a lot with the refugees coming in, but also Christian refugees that are leaving their countries, setting up their life here in Europe. And most of the most vibrant churches across Europe are usually the non-European churches. So this is also something as a hope for our continent.
Yeah, so it's important to remember a lot of these refugees are Christians. Of course, the majority of them are Muslims. And that raises the question, evangelicals always debate, should it be evangelism or is it showing the compassion and care of Christ or is it both? And if so, how do we handle that tension? So some thoughts on that.
It's both. Paul, we were talking earlier, you were saying how you have a holistic approach. It's the person and it's the spiritual life of the person. So I work with both refugees and immigrants who are very needy, who need me to take them to the doctor, who need me to be with them when they miscarry or when they're struggling. But I also debate with the thinkers of Islam, and I challenge the ideology. If it's the refugee who is no religion or from another religion that's not Islamic, again, I see them as people made in the image of God. I want to minister to them as valuable before God. But I care for their whole being, for their physical needs, but also for their spiritual. I don't think you can divorce one from the other.
Paul?
And the fact that this holistic approach, to me, it also speaks of, you mentioned the image of God, that God has put within us the essence, everything we need to know him. And so we're connecting with that image of God, and when we connect that image with the Word of God, it's like there's a spark and it comes alive in the person, and suddenly they see their life in a new way, they see the journey they've gone on, they see their future in a new way, and it's a powerful thing. We say we are building on the resilience of refugees. And I think that resilience comes from the image of God, what God has put into each person. And that's what we're building on. It has the capacity as a resilient material, as a resilient person to bend back. And we bend back through Christ and through the Word.
Yeah, and it's good. Like I agree with the other two as well. We need to combine those two. And whether what the order is, sometimes evangelism comes for us because people are really hungry for knowing more about the continent they're coming into. Sometimes they need food or clothes or whatever. So sometimes you have to postpone the gospel part in a sense. Although as a Christian, you can always communicate, we are doing this out of our Christian identity and because we love you as a human person. I think we have to be careful to just see them as objects for conversion. They are human beings that have a need, and we can help them in many ways to deal with that need, including, and it's one of the biggest gifts we can give them, of course, is to share our lives and to share Jesus Christ with them.
Now, churches and communities are responding in different ways, and you've all got lots of experience in this and aware of what's going on in a way that maybe those who've come to listen are not as much. So I wonder if you could share with us any exciting initiatives that you've seen of Christian churches or communities who are responding in godly ways, and tell us some stories of patterns that maybe could be followed elsewhere.
I work in northern France, and the Evangelical Alliance in northern France in this last year and a half has established a platform as a way for the churches to connect on these issues and to coordinate together, because what has been happening is a lot of refugees who enter Europe then will try to reach the UK, and they come to northern France and they get stuck there. And there have been as many as 7,000 or 8,000 probably in Calais and Dunkirk and that whole region. And they live in dire circumstances. And so churches from the UK and from other parts of Europe have been coming, and the efforts have been totally uncoordinated. and so this effort by the Solidarity Platform has been really important in order to help bring some stability, some coordination to this effort. So, because we as churches have very limited resources, and it's very important to put them in the right place at the right time. Mostly people are thinking we'll bring clothing, we'll bring food, but there's a whole lot more that needs to be given besides that.
There's one of my colleagues in the Netherlands got in touch with a refugee who actually came to the town where he lives, they don't notice that many of the refugees did go to the shopping center next door to the church building. So they thought, well, they're hanging around before they all go back to the refugee center. Let's open our building to have them drink some coffee or wash themselves or have a shower or something else, and as well start conversations. Well, he started the conversation with one of the people coming into the church building, and that person had met Christians also already in Greece. And when my colleague spoke with him, he said, I remembered it, that place in Greece as a safe haven. It was provided by Christians, and I really enjoyed being there. And so it was encouraging to see how Christians ministered to that person when he came into Greece. And immediately, it was the first thing he did, he met with Christians. And then all the way, months later, he met another Christian in the Netherlands, and basically picking up, collaborating in a sense, without knowing each other, of how to minister to refugees in the name of Christ.
Beth?
Yeah, there's an interesting story of one of the receiving countries, I won't say which one, where there was a group of churches that came together from many different denominations. And this group of churches had said, we're going to minister to their felt needs, but we're not going to evangelize them. And that became a policy. There was this couple who were a part of that, and they said, no, this is not something we accept. We want to reach their felt needs, and we also want to reach their spiritual needs. So they actually moved off on their own. They were ostracized, but they moved off on their own, started meeting the people in the refugee centers and started doing Bible studies with them on the floors of the refugee centers and started seeing Muslims come to Christ. They had not gone to work with Muslims in this country, but they said the majority of the refugees coming through in that particular country were the Muslims, and they started seeing people come to Christ. And I thought that was a wonderful example of combining that holistic approach to the refugee, both looking after their felt needs, but especially also looking after their spiritual needs. And that's also on the front line. Sorry, Paul. That's on the front lines. I just wanted to add, those of us who are in countries who are not necessarily on the receiving countries, we can also be mobilized to do things. There's a couple that are actually sitting here in the hall, Helen and Gerard. They have opened their house to a refugee who's become a Christian because the church was not ministering to refugees who became a Christian. You have these young men who fall through the cracks and the church doesn't know how to disciple them. And it takes Christians in any of the countries in Europe to open up their home, to sacrifice their lives, and to invest in the lives of these refugees, be it Christian or non, but especially for those who come to Christ who lose absolutely everything. And that's just an example of not a couple that are missionaries, but of just a normal Christian couple living in Europe who have opened up their home.
I can give one more example in Lille, in the city where I live. There's refugees living on the streets, and about 80 to 90 of these are minors who are requesting the right to live in France based on the fact that they're not 18. And so they were living in this one area of the city, and the local officials went to the local church, the Baptist church in that area, and asked them, is there anything you can do? And so the church began to take these guys in and let them open their doors, and they would sleep there at night, and then they would leave each morning and be on the streets during the day. And this went on for some months, and then the other churches began to work together with this church to provide food on weekend nights when the other agencies were not giving food. And so they were coming and getting involved in the issue. And after about a year, the Baptist Church was actually able to pull together a whole community of people, even outside the church, from the whole neighborhood, who were cooking meals in other ways. And I came to this meeting, and there were maybe 60 people who were coming to discuss these issues of citizens from Lille, church people, non-church people, all around this issue. And so it was a great example of how the church is also reaching the local community as well through this issue.
Of course, there's a much bigger picture here too of the crisis in the Middle East with ISIS generating this huge flow and what's happening with a lot of totalitarian governments and the March of Islam too in Africa, which is fueling the flow across the Mediterranean. And people have talked about a political solution to the whole issue, but we know that sovereign governments are instituted by God. They're put here, they're under his authority to act for the protection of citizens and to care for people who are vulnerable and marginalized. But it raises the question, what's the government's role in all of this? and what's the church's role, the Christian's role, and can we clearly define those? Are we tempted perhaps to be doing the government's job, or the government's trying to do a job that only Christians can do? So some thoughts on that.
We had a really good discussion in the network meeting on this, and one of the points that was made was that the government needs to do its job and to enforce its laws, and we have laws set up. We have processes and laws in place to protect society and to protect people, and these things need to be upheld. Refugees are fleeing for protection, for security, for peace, and they understand these issues, and the majority of them will come together and say, yes, this is what I want. I want to obey these laws. I want to follow these laws. And so the state, I believe, needs to be about making clear to refugees and newcomers, this is how we live, and this is how we function. These are our laws, and they need to enforce those. That's
yes,
one thing.
And like in Germany, actually, some of the laws are being new laws that have been implemented to help the refugees say, okay, you can stay as long as you abide by these and these rules. I think that's the responsibility of the governments to make sure that people abide by the rules we have made for ourselves. And of course, well, Romans 13 and 14 speaks about the role of the government and the role of Christians. We are called to love our enemies, to pray for those who persecute us, to love those that hate us. That you cannot call the government to do that kind of thing. That's not their role. Our role is very different. We can love the refugees. We can welcome them. We can show them everything about us about with grace. The government has a totally different role. And I agree that often Christians begin like acting like little politicians sometimes, and the way we talk about it, the way we think that things should be done. And if we can stay away from blurring the two roles, I think it would be a lot easier for all of us, I guess.
So Christians can try and do what is really the politician's job, but does it work the other way around ever, Beth? Do you think the government ever tries to do things that actually only the church can do effectively?
Well, there is a movements that are supported by the government. It's not so much to do with the refugees, but immigrants and refugees are involved in this, I suppose. There's a program in Britain called Prevent, which is looking at the radicalization of Muslims. Of course, that's going to be growing because some of the refugees coming in are not genuine refugees. Some are very genuine, some are not. And we have to be wise as we grapple with that. But the government has this program where it's called Prevent. They're trying to stop the radicalization of immigrants and so on. And they've not had much success. And those of us who are Christians who work with radicals, we've had quite a lot of success. We've seen a lot of the people who had an ideology that doesn't fit into our society at all completely changed. So there are certain things that only the Christian can do because we have the ideology and the solution to those who come into the land and cannot fit into the land because of their original religion. And so I think when it comes to religious issues, that's where the Christian can really stand strong and we can provide a solution that the government can. And for the Christian, I think when we respond to the refugee crisis, we, like Bert said, we love them, but we don't love them without truth. Truth and love must be together. So we love the Muslim, we love the Yazidi refugee, we love the Alevi refugee, all of these different kinds of refugees that have come in, different ideologies. We don't love their ideas, but we love them. And in loving them, then we aid them, we help them. We don't aid their religion, but we help them. And the ultimate way to help is to introduce them to the Savior. And I think that has to always be our end goal, regardless if we're in politics or not. You can't be the avid evangelist in politics, but you certainly can find a way to represent Christ within your roles.
And you might say it's part of being a good citizen is that Christians should do what only they could do and be bold and courageous in doing that. I wonder if we could shift on now to the Turkish question, because this agreement with Turkey is going to change the dynamic of Europe. Do you see any particular challenges this brings, and how should the church be responding?
Yeah, maybe you also know, soon after that decision was made, the government in Kenya, who's hosted over 500,000 refugees for decades, has decided we're going to end our refugee program. Now, I don't know if they were following our example or not, but I think it sent a big signal to the rest of the world that, well, if this is about financial issues and economic issues, then we should also cash in as well. So I think that's a consequence that I feel like we've sold our soul to the devil a little bit. I feel like we've lost our moral backbone by doing this. And just using that, I feel like that's what we as a community of Christians, that's what we have to bring to this. And that's why the government, to go back to the previous question, really needs to look at the Christians as an important piece in this, because we can bring a moral aspect to this. We can bring a religious perspective, and that's the perspective that that refugees are coming from as well. We understand that, and we can bring that into this issue. So I think that the government needs to do more to stay out of what we can do, and we need to stay out of what they should be doing, but they need to find a way to activate citizens, to allow citizens to get involved in these issues.
Beth, what about Turkey?
Yeah, I actually came to England to work with Turks. That's the reason I went to England from Africa, then through America, back to the UK. And I worked with Kurdish refugees from Turkey. And that was about 20 years ago, where there was a huge movement of Kurds leaving Turkey, coming in. And of course, the Kurdish situation has flared up again. Now, there's a lot of Kurds and converts from Islam who live in Britain, who sought refuge there, away from Turkey. Now, if the doors fling wide open, that movement and that security is not quite so secure for them anymore. So the security issues from those refugees who are already established in Europe, if we fling open the doors to Turkey. We have to recognize Turkey is 72 million, maybe more Muslims. It is 99% Muslim population. It has a very strong Muslim government. So those that had to have a country that we're now opening the doors to 72 million Muslims, that's a very serious issue for Europe, and we have to be very wise in how we deal with it. We talk about how we have to love the human, but it doesn't mean we have to love the ideology. We have to be very wise as Christians how we respond to this.
Bert, did you have?
I think the Turkey deal is a complex thing, and in a sense, the European governments are acting out of a lack of options or lack of willingness to really deal with the issue and in a sense push it away to another border. We have to acknowledge the fact that a lot of the countries in the region, whether it be Lebanon or Jordan, are already taking in a lot of refugees. So in a sense, Europe seems like, okay, now we have dealt with the problem. I don't think it's finally dealt with. It may come back, and I know how long the deal will actually last. So we may see an increase again of refugees coming in. I just want to bring in another thing, which I think we talk about refugees coming to Europe from the Middle East. We also should not be blind to the fact that there are a lot of refugees internally in Europe. Some people here from Ukraine, as many Ukrainians are actually displaced people within the Ukraine. 1.4 million, as many Ukrainians in Ukraine as people, refugees coming out of Middle East towards Europe. So sometimes the refugee crisis becomes a crisis because Islam has something to do with it in the minds of people. But if you just look at people, just as human beings being displaced, whether it's from one country to another, one nation or one continent to another, the problem is far bigger and maybe even far different than the one we are talking about here.
Yes, as we started by saying that there are twice as many forcibly internally displaced people in the world as there are refugees.
Yeah.
Just perhaps one question, and then we'll close on this part of the discussion. There has been alarm and anxiety expressed about some of the people coming in with the refugees, and stories about sex abuse in Cologne or links with the what happened in Paris and Brussels, that some of these people came as part of the crisis. Any reflections on that? Is that an overreaction? Is it something we should be concerned about? How should Christians be responding to that whole issue?
Well, it's something that we cannot deny. It does take place. There are people coming into Europe with wrong intentions. Whether we have to decide whether to love a person because he is a potential lovable person or whether it's a potential enemy, I don't think it's up to us to decide. But we don't know. It's absolutely true. There are people coming into Europe with wrong intentions who set up, coming in to try to create havoc here. There are people that are abusing women. So these things do take place. I think it's something that the government again has to look into it. I find it a little bit hard when I hear Christians saying, well, we should differentiate loving our neighbor, but only if the neighbor is kind and European enough to love him. And I think, well, that doesn't seem to be biblical. At the same time, we have to not be naive to realize, okay, there are people coming into Europe that are, it's a minority, it's by far a small minority. But, they could create, and they have created, problems, and more will come. I'm no doubt about that, that will happen.
Let me just clarify something first of all with regard to the Turkish situation. I've just been chatting to Charlie Hoare from CARE about this over the break. And just to clarify that a final agreement has not been made with Turkey yet. It is dependent upon the Turkish government making some legislative changes, which might be difficult for them. And also a new dimension is that there's been a court case in Lesbos, one of the islands in the Aegean Sea, challenging about whether it's safe for refugees to be sent back to Turkey. And then, of course, we've got the bigger question of Turkey joining the EU. And just to stress that this agreement doesn't involve Turkey joining the EU, which would be something all 28 nations of the EU would have to agree to. It's all about visa-free travel for Turks, in which only the Schengen countries, about two-thirds of European countries, would be involved in that decision. So, first of all, the first question we've got for our panel is, are there ways you've seen your national governments or local governments invite the church to assist? Is the UN and our national governments open to this, or are they stopping the churches from assisting because of wanting to stop proselytizing and what might come with it? So what kind of response have you seen from national governments to the church?
I gave the example in Lille of the community officials there approaching the church, where we used to live and work in Austria. There was in Reuter, a small village, and the local church there reached out to the refugees, began visiting them and doing things with the kids, teaching language. And a refugee said to me in one of the meetings, he said, I've been here for 3 years, and this is the first time that anyone has noticed us or visited us. And the community also saw it as well. And so they called a kind of round table together with the priest and the mayor and the church. And the church said this was the first time that they were on the map in that community.
Yeah, same thing in the Netherlands. Several towns or several mayors have invited the civil society, including churches, to come to a meeting when there's a refugee center to be opened. And just say, well, we need all your help in taking care of these people. In other places, refugee centers were very open to receive Christians coming in and helping out, including practical ways, but also doing Bible studies and Christian film showings and so on. After a few months, actually, it was more of a centralized coordination, which then limited the number of Christians to go in. Actually, they could still come in, but not evangelize anymore. So the Christian churches then set up something outside of the centers, just a few kilometers away or 1 kilometer away, to start continuing the same thing, but not in the center, but then just outside of the center.
Have any of you seen any hostility towards Christian initiatives to help?
I think sometimes maybe not just politicians, but just people in our populations sometimes will say, well, see, religion is the cause of this refugee crisis, so we don't want any religion. And unfortunately, they lump us all into the same box. And this is where we as Christians have to stand up. And we have to be a little bit, maybe say something very different, say, does all religion, are you sure it's all religion causing the crisis? There is one religion that is causing a crisis, the Islamic form of ISIS. And I think it's right to point that out. So we as Christians have a responsibility to speak up and say, does Christ teach us to treat people like ISIS is treating people, and help them think that through? It's not all religions. There is one religion causing a problem here, but that's a point where you can start being an evangelist, start bringing in the truth and start challenging false ideas. So I think we have a responsibility to challenge an idea that does permeate through a lot of European minds, that religion is the problem. Religion is not the problem. There is one religion at the moment that is causing an issue. And I think we need to be upfront about that.
Now, there's a bit of frustration expressed from the floor that you all three of you seem to be agreeing on everything. And one question that's come up strongly, three different people have raised this, is the financial implications on a huge wave of refugees coming into Europe and descending on countries, many of which already have huge financial problems, and maybe disproportionately on some of the countries in Southern Europe, which have particularly struggled. So how can we respond to these problems when countries are already spending and don't have enough to spend on housing, welfare, education, health for their own people, let alone other refugees coming? And should we be letting vast numbers in to swamp existing systems? So, and that's a very real fear felt by many people, and some Christians would share that fear. So how do you respond to that?
Well, I mean, this is an example in point that I think a question is called, is a question, is it a question that the church should address, or is the question that the government should address? And I mean, it doesn't mean that we don't have an answer, but I don't think we should, I mean, we should be the ones answering the question. It's a question that governments need to deal with. It's something that they are dealing with, sometimes not very well. I have to be honest about it. They try to have the quota dividing up the refugees among one another, which didn't really succeed very well. I find it hard as a Christian, as a local Christian leader, to answer. For me, is I can see it on the ground. It seems unfair that if you are unemployed and trying to make end meet, that a refugee comes in and after a few months seems to be living in a house, a rented house with all the furniture provided for. It doesn't seem fair. In that sense, I can understand the sometimes the anxious feelings. Nevertheless, I still want to make a distinction between the role of the governments and the role of the church in this one.
I guess some people might say that, okay, we're not politicians, but we all have a vote. So should we be, as Christians, voting for parties which are wanting to restrict immigration and respond to the refugee crisis in a different way? Sure. Any thoughts on that?
Just to be clear, it's not that all of us want, I personally don't think it's right to just fling open the doors and have everyone come in. But the fact is, lots of people have come in. So how do I now respond to a situation that has happened? There's that Christian response. We do love the immigrant, we do love the refugee, but there's also wisdom. There's wisdom for our countries and for the next following generations. There's wisdom where we, like for example, Angela Merkel opened up the doors, if you can get to Germany, come. Was that a wise decision? On hindsight, probably a few of us are very uncomfortable with that decision, but the fact is it was made, it happened. We have to respond now to that which has happened. If there are lots of Christians in England that are voting for parties that will limit immigration. Is that a bad thing? Not necessarily. But if we do limit immigration, then we have to think of a way to minister to those in need, and we have to think of a way to support the Christians who are on the front lines in Italy and in Greece and other countries like it, who don't have the resources that maybe some of us from other countries would. And I think as Christians, to care for our brothers and sisters who are in the front line. I know a key player in Italy. I want to fund his ministry. I want to support his ministry because he's right there reaching the refugees on the front line. So I'm not there in Italy, but I can certainly support. And that's being part of the Christian community. And this is how we as Europeans can, Christians can come together and support one another, not to give handouts, but to help those who are on the front line doing a job that I personally can't do because I'm not there on the islands and so on, welcoming the refugees. So that's where we can practically help one another and build the church together. But it doesn't mean you have to agree with an open policy either. It's okay to not necessarily agree with that. But it's when we get a chip on the shoulder and we get filled with bitterness and hatred, then that's sinful. So it's how we're responding to the situation, a very difficult situation that we're in. And yes, it's okay to vote if you want to vote, but never with hatred and never with bitterness.
Is there a difference between economic migrants on the one hand and refugees on the other? And how easy is it to tell the difference between them? And should we be responding to the two groups differently?
I think that you'll have refugees that are probably economic migrants. But you'll also have economic migrants who come out of situations that are equal to being refugees. And so this is a, these are issues that's really difficult and complex, and something that I think is very difficult to understand or to make a decision on. But but we have a process, we have an asylum process in place for officials to make those decisions. And I think we need to have good monitoring of that process to make sure that they are doing it in a fair and just way, and that those, for example, who are Christians, who maybe have come for economic reasons, and they become Christians, and suddenly they have refugee reasons for not being able to return. It's a complex, a very mixed bag of what the solution and what the decisions are. And yet there needs to be good monitoring of those interviews, of the whole process that the person is going through, to make sure that they receive a fair asylum process. And the translators are not biased, that that the actual situation of the person returning to their home country is considered, and so forth.
You have to realize there are already plenty of economic migrants going back and forth in Europe itself. How many of Eastern Europeans are working in the western part of Europe? They are economic migrants. So is that the problem? So in that sense, I want us to look at it from a European point of view. How often are we economic migrants when we move out of our cities into our suburbs? Maybe saying, well, that's a totally different thing. Well, try to put yourself in the shoes of a person who is trying to raise a family somewhere and trying to have ends meet, and then this seems to be promised land. Often actually after a few years, they discover that this is not promised land, and they may actually try to find a way back. And then they are even in bigger trouble sometimes.
So it would be difficult for me to disagree on this issue, because I don't think of myself as an economist or versed in these kinds of issues. But theologically, Abraham was an economic migrant. And in fact, he was a liar on top of that. And yet God used that situation. And how many migrants do we have out there in similar situations? And God is using these situations and working through them.
Yeah, I guess if Abimelech had sent Abraham back to Ur, he would have saved himself a bit of trouble. But there we are. It's history, and the Lord has used it. There's no doubt, of course, that the refugee crisis has caused all sorts of logistic problems.
Yes.
And this next question is one about, how do we talk to our non-Christian friends about this crisis, who may have very strong feelings about it, without just sounding naive and, you know, sounding platitudes, and being accused of being oversimplistic as Christians?
Well, it's quite interesting. A lot of the Kurdish community who came in as refugees and they're now second generation, and my best friend back in London, she's not a Christian, but my best non-Christian friend is a Kurdish second generation refugee. She's very against all the immigrants and the refugees coming into England. And it's quite interesting, as a second generation refugee, she's against them all coming in because she's made such a home here and she loves it and she feels British now, and she doesn't really want that to change, and she sees the change. Talking with her and others like her is, again, it's an amazing opportunity to share Christ, not to sound quiche, but to be able to talk with her and say, okay, and I, with her it's easier because I can say to her, your parents came in as refugees. How would you feel if you lost everything? Your family was being killed around you and you lost absolutely everything. To help them think, put themselves into those shoes. And then that's a way you can start saying, well, you know, as a Christian, I do want to care for people, even those that are different from me. Christ cares for those who are different from him. And so I want to care for those who are different from me. And you can really weave the gospel into those conversations. So again, I think this whole situation, it's not a good situation. Having this refugee crisis is not good. It's made all sorts of complications for us. But we can always turn it for an opportunity for the gospel. And I think ultimately, as Christians, that's how we have to keep responding to it. That's how we just have to keep responding to it.
One of the things that I discovered is the easiest thing to help our non-believing friends to deal with this is to have them meet a refugee, get to learn the life story. It's far harder to talk in general terms once you start knowing the circumstances of a certain person. say, well, everyone may be wrong, but this person has to stay here. All of a sudden, their whole mindset begins to change because of now a refugee becoming a human being. And it helps enormously. I've set up in Amsterdam, it's like a lunch where refugees and local Amsterdammers meet for lunch and music. It's just a practical way of, and just by meeting each other, things begin to change. So that's very simple.
We've got a question here about the missiological implication. So in terms of the Great Commission, it's interesting that many of these refugees are coming from countries that are limited access countries for mission. So what does that mean in terms of God's big plan that they're now coming to us? Could this be something within God's sovereign rule that's prompting us?
Yeah. I think we can be fairly strategic in this. Maybe as Christians, we can be very strategic. What I would love to see is many of the refugees who come, hopefully, we hope that things will calm down in Syria and other places like it. If these refugees come and we see hundreds of them, if not thousands saved, then maybe we need to help disciple them so that this is not going to be your end country that you're going to stay in. As a refugee, when your land becomes free again and stable, let's get so many refugees saved, and then let's get them back into their homelands to take the gospel back. And I think that could be a real strategy that we as Christians and a part of our discipleship of refugees is to help them dare to go back and dare to be the missionaries in the land that we cannot really go back and be the missionaries to. And maybe that's something we need to think about, how we can make that happen.
The thing that comes to my mind when I think of the missiological implication is I see as a mission of the word, in that God uses his word to change people. And when we bring people in touch with that word and with God's word, He does incredible things, and it's the mission of the word. So he doesn't need us. So I mean that in a good sense. I think what we see happening is a good thing, because it's helping us to get back to a lot of basics, a lot of things that are important in our mission and in missiology. One of the things that I've was researching and as I worked on my PhD was looking at how refugees came to faith and how that coming to faith influenced their voice and how they were expressing their life as Christians. And the theory that I saw and what I see among refugees is that they see themselves in the scriptures. And what they need to see, they need to see the word. And when they read the word, when they dream of the word, when they see something that reminds them of something from the scriptures, they see themselves in that, and God uses that to change their hearts. And it's a very powerful, it's the way God has worked for forever, and we see that happening.
We've got some more political questions here now, inevitably, for you. It may not be that we can do much about the crisis in the Middle East with ISIS, but perhaps many of those refugees coming from Africa are coming from situations where there's been disastrous political policies, resettling policies, agricultural policies, and so on. How much of a responsibility and what can we do as Christians in the West to try and influence what's happening in countries abroad so that there is not the same need to be migrating to Europe?
I think the first thing we need to do is emphasize prayer. That's what refugees understand. That's what people in these situations so hold on to, is this connection, this direct line to God and to his people and the community. And I think we need to be emphasizing that as well. When we do, we really touch on a real solidarity factor. We stand in solidarity with them. So that's one thing.
I'm not a politician, I'm an evangelist, so that's how I look at everything. You know, we're not really mentioning this too much, and we know that some of the refugees coming in are not necessarily from different religions, but the majority are Muslim, but also the majority of the problems are being caused by Islam. We just have to say that up front. There is something about this religion that is against the rest of the world when it's really taken in its very base form. And we see that right across North Africa, we see that right through the Middle East. Now, it's not to say that the West hasn't dabbled and made a bit of a mess of things. Some of our foreign policies have certainly not helped the case. But there is something about this particular religion that is causing the problem. And I think as Christians, we need to engage with that. We are dealing with a refugee crisis, that's the human, but there's an ideology behind it that we need to engage with, and our governments do not understand it. Western governments do not understand. And it's uniquely the Christian, who is a Bible-based Christian, who is a textual Christian, who follows the Lord Jesus Christ, we get how people are driven by a text and driven by following a person, and that is what radical Islam is, and it is causing havoc. So I think, again, as the Christian, we can, if we somehow try help those in government, those in policymaking, to understand folks, you as a secular person maybe can't understand what it is to be driven by a text. But me as a Christian, I do understand what it is to be driven by a text. Help, let me help you explain what is motivating some of the problems in the Middle East. Maybe if we begin to understand it, we can start to deal with it in a slightly more intelligent way.
The comment was made that our people on the panel are in agreement mostly. I disagree with my sister here in some ways, because I think we have to be careful to just point the problems into the ideology as Islam, as if everyone coming in holds on to the core of Islam. A lot of the victims actually of radical Muslims are Muslims themselves. They make no distinction between Christians, Muslims or whatever. So in that sense, I agree, radical Islam is something that we should be careful about. Islam as such, or people, I would rather talk with people, Muslims as individual people who happen to practice a certain religion in a certain way. Some do in a more traditional way, some more in a liberal way, some more in a moderate way. There are at least 15 different expressions of Islam found in Europe, and we need to differentiate. I think one of the things I find Christians do is we put all the Muslims in the same basket, and that's not right either, as we don't want to associate ourselves sometimes with so-called Christians. If our the guy from Norway blows up a lot of young people in Norway, we don't refer to him as being a Lutheran or a former Lutheran. We just say he is a Norwegian. And while something happens in the name of Islam, we sometimes immediately associate it with Muslims. So I want to make that distinction. I find myself working alongside Muslims who are eagerly dealing with radicalization in Islam, very actively involved in trying to have a moderate voice. Their voice is being heard, increasingly being heard. And as Christians, we do well to allow the variety of opinions, the variety of the ways Islam is being expressed in Europe to enter that our minds and not have the media portray just one aspect of it and believing that this is the only way that Islam is being expressed in Europe. It's not the only way as it is being expressed nor now nor in the future.
And I would also add to that, I stand with you, but I find that in working with the officials here, we walk on really delicate ground. And if we were to go, and we have to work with gatekeepers, and if we were to go in with an evangelistic, oppositional kind of approach into a camp, the gatekeeper would close the door on us. They understand that we are coming from a church, are coming from a faith-based, but they don't understand our evangelism. And if we go in with only that that as the result, that's the only thing they see. If they don't see any other way that we're relating to people, then they close the door. And the issue for me on that is how do we then gain access? Because the gatekeepers can shut us out. And so we have to somehow be very wise about this. While at the same time, I agree with your what you're saying. But at the same time, there's a very delicate balance we have to find.
Yes, and just to clarify, we certainly, the way when we go into the refugee camps, we go in as, like we said earlier, to meet their felt needs, and in doing that, we also hope we meet their spiritual needs. So yes, there are certain wise ways to build relationships with those who are in charge. My point is getting back to the actual root of the problem, not so much how we actually engage with the secular world or in the refugee camps and so on, but what is the root, what is the cause of the problem? And yes, Islam is manifest in many different ways in Europe, but that doesn't mean, just like the liberals don't represent most of us in this room, I would not let a liberal define my religion. Most of us would agree the Bible is the word of God and Jesus is our savior. That is really what an orthodox Muslim would be. So yes, there are liberal Muslims in our society, and we as Westerners love to engage with them because they're similar to us. But do they represent the average Muslim and the average refugee? Most likely not. It's just getting to the root cause of it. How we wisely engage with policymakers is different. But what is the root cause? I think Islam is at the root cause.
We've got some questions here on radical Islam. You'll be delighted to know. So this one, how do we reach out to radicalized Muslims of the ISIS variety when they hate Christians and would rather or would cut off your head if they realized you were a believer?
Well, my whole team is ready to have their heads chopped off, so we know that might well happen, and most of us will probably meet and end up in the grave quite early. Our team works with radical Muslims. That's one of our passions. We study radical Islam, and we debate radical Muslims. Both, when we say radical, we're not talking about your terrorists necessarily. That is that wing. Extremist, if you want to call them. I don't like calling them extremist. I see ISIS as the closest to what I see written in the Quran. It's not to say that there's not moderate Muslims, there are, but ISIS does, if you read the Quran, ISIS is the most logical conclusion of what would come out of someone who follows the Quran and the life of Muhammad. So the way we engage with radical Muslims, we probably get them before they start chopping our heads off. We debate them. We engage those ideas. And we've seen Muslims who are radical or come from radical families come to faith, and they become a radical Christian. A Christian who really does believe in the roots of their faith, which is what a radical is. So it's, you engage the ideas. I do believe, not as a Christian here, but talking as our governments, it is right to stop an evil force. And if it needs the war, and Romans talks about that the governments police, if you like, the world, it is right to stop a very evil force like ISIS. It is evil. And it is damaging for the world. So if the politicians want to raise up and they want to use the army, then I think there is a place for that. But that's not my role as a Christian. I want to get them saved. And so in London, where we have many radical Muslims, we are seeing them come to Christ by simply debating, engaging their ideas, and just meeting them head on before that form of Islam begins to take further root into our society. It's a little bit dangerous, but we have to do it.
Here's another political question. What does the panel think about fences being put up in between some of the southern countries of Europe and some of them with razor wire?
I don't think it's addressing the issues. I think it's keeping the issue out. It's not necessarily addressing the issue.
No, I think it's often fear-based. And of course, it's understandable. I was in Hungary a few weeks ago. I mean, it's understandable. Most of the refugees actually who want to come to Hungary don't want to stay there. Anyway, in that sense. But it's kind of the mindset, the climate in the country, particularly in some countries, is often so fear-driven. I tend to disagree. I want to pick up on what Beth said about ISIS being the only way or the core way that Islam is being, or as the Quran is being read. There has been a public open letter by 80 Muslim scholars from different parts of the world, from different aspects of Islam, who actually point for point addressed ISIS key issues, and saying, on this point, we disagree with our interpretation of the Quran. On this point, we disagree with our interpretation of the Quran. I think, we have to be careful. I agree with you that ISIS is a dangerous thing. I disagree with you that ISIS represents the core of Islam. I don't think it's true.
Also, just to go back to that question is, too, I so appreciate that God has equipped you and others in the way that he has. He has not equipped me in that way. But one thing that I do in working in this kind of setting is I take a Muslim background believer with me, and I take them with me, and I take my lead from them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
We've just about run out of time. We've got a comment, and I'm afraid we didn't get to all of your questions. I've left out a few that were not directly relating to the refugee crisis that maybe we can come back to in discussion afterwards, and do feel free to engage the speakers. But there's been a comment here about, comment not a question, about resources available, and saying from a pastor here in Georgia that the Crescent Project has very simple, reproducible training for small groups and churches that can be easily deployed across the churches in Europe. And this tool called Bridges, he's found it's been very useful. But perhaps in closing, if I could ask each member of the panel, are there any resources you'd like to point people to, study guides, information, things that they could pick up or find easily that would help them engage more deeply with this issue? But
this is a little brochure that the European Evangelical Alliance produced, Europe's Refugee Crisis, What to Think About It. We have plenty of copies with us here, so you can pick it up if you want. It's free. I did work on a course myself. It's called Sharing Lives. It's helping Christians to overcome their fear of Islam and engaging and sharing their lives with Muslims. That has been translated in 12 European languages. And I'm now basically training trainers to get that material out across Europe.
Yes, I would also point to the European, the EEA website, the European Evangelical Alliance website. They have a dedicated page to the refugee crisis. And you can go on there and click under resources. And they've collected lots of resources from across Europe. There's also the Refugee Highway Network. That has a resource page, and you can click on that. Coming up in June 19th and June 26th is the World Refugee Sunday, one of those two Sundays, and there are resources on there regarding that. And then my own organization is really, we're putting together a training as well, really helping churches to look at how they can best, besides just dropping off clothes and food, how they can best address this issue and work from their strengths.
Beth?
Yes, there's two point people I know, one couple in Greece and one couple in Italy, and I can give you the names afterwards, key point people if you want to actually actively get involved as some of those frontline countries. Those in the Founders Centre for Apologetics here in London, it's not a course to know how to reach refugees, but it is a course to know how to very confidently share your faith with a Muslim, which is the majority of the refugees coming in. That can be refugees of all kinds of Islamic levels and also all kinds of education. And so we have a course that is taught online. It can go through the whole year. It's once every Wednesday evening, but you have it's online and you have a week to download it if you can't watch it live. And we've had quite a few people from ELF last year who've been on that course. And we've had most of our students, some of whom are working with refugees, have felt that because of that course, they've been able to confidently begin to talk about spiritual matters with their refugee friends as they're coming into their countries. So we've been very encouraged by this course. You can talk to us about it afterwards if you want to.
Thanks very much to our panel, to Beth, to Paul, to Bert, for your wisdom and eloquence and good advice, and your disagreement too on some issues too, which has been refreshing. And perhaps in closing, we should just remember that we can all, even if we're not in touch with refugees, there's three things that we can all do, and that's to pray, both individually and collectively, to give financially, and also to talk to other people, both non-Christians and Christian believers in churches, about the issue.